Hello, and welcome to the Gardening in Canada podcast. I'm your host, Ashley, and I'm a soil scientist. I like to take all that science and apply it to both plants indoors and outside. Let's get started. Hello, plant people. How are you guys doing today? If you're new to this podcast or just to the Gardening in Canada platform in general, please leave your questions down below in the comment section or send me an email at ashley@gardeningincanada.net, or even better yet, send me a voicemail. There is a link that you can click in the show notes where you can actually leave me a voicemail. And if it's a question, then I can incorporate it into the podcast when I do a Q&A episode. Today's episode, we're talking about Vericast, vermicompost, beginning to end, whether you're purchasing it or doing it on your own at home. I'm going to give you all the deets on why it is considered a miracle product or why it maybe is fluffed up a little bit more than what it should be. So I want to start off with two very famous quotes by two very old dudes, one of which is Charles Darwin and the other Aristotle, both of which I'm sure we're all familiar with. Charles Darwin says, "Earthworms are the unheralded soldiers of mankind," and Aristotle used to call them the intestines of the earth. And that is a very, very accurate description for these guys, because red wigglers in particular, or the composting worms we use in our compost bins, are notorious for eating large amounts of organic material in all shapes and sizes. So with that being said, I do want to put a little bit of a disclaimer at the front of this video. Fun fact about earthworms is that they are not native to Canada and to other portions of North America. The glaciers did a doozy when it came to earthworm activity in our soils, and so all of the existing ecology in the world today, boreal forests in particular, have been grown or adapted without the presence of earthworms. So when earthworms show up, they tend to be less than ideal additions, because they will consume stuff that typically is used either for fertilizer or for a seed bank, that sort of thing. And so the University of Toronto has been doing studies on earthworms in the boreal forest, particularly in Ontario region, as a way to try to hopefully preserve the ecology of the area, because earthworms are doing quite a bit of damage. Now, a lot of earthworms were brought over by Europeans. I think 19 different species-ish have been brought over by Europeans. Others have been brought up through the U.S. into Canada. Not all of North America is earthworm-less. There is certain earthworms that are native to the lower portions of North America. And then there also is just earthworm movement naturally to the northern region. So some may argue that it's inevitable anyways that the boreal forest will just cease to exist because of earthworms, or maybe change what it looks like due to earthworms, because naturally earthworms are moving north, which, I mean, is a valid argument. Ecosystems have ebbs and flows all the time. It's the reason why we find, you know, camel bones, for example, up in the northern regions of the tundra. Clearly, at some point, it was habitable for camels. So that's just a fun fact. That means if you are a vermicompost person and you are using vermicompost in your home, then I highly, heavily encourage you to sift properly, remove any cocoons or baby worms that may have gotten through your sifting process. Just do your due diligence. Try to add less rather than more. And always keep in mind, if you are in a more moderate climate, such as Ontario, BC regions that don't get as cold, red wigglers tend to survive just fine in your areas. But if you're in a wonderful zone 3, like I am here in Saskatchewan, it is really, really cold. And so earthworms tend to cease to exist because our soil is much, much too cool. Now, this is particularly true for upper soil dwellers, such as the red wigglers, but there are species that obviously go a little bit deeper. So, into the soil profile, they live in the lower regions, and they're not as good at decomposing. Something else to keep in mind there. But nonetheless, let's get into vermicompost and some tips and tricks on how to actually set up a bin, and then we'll move into some of the properties and soil science behind the product, as and discover whether or not it's worth the purchased. So composting is a non-thermophilic biooxidative process. That's a really fancy way of saying it doesn't get hot and it's using a belly mechanism, so some sort of digestive system, to digest the product without the presence of oxygen, and that would be inside of the earthworm's tummy. So when it comes to vermicomposting, it shouldn't be hot, it should not smell, and you should not have mold and bugs and everything else. And so when I set up my bins, I did the due diligence to try to prevent this as much as possible. I have mine just in a simple Rubbermaid bin. Now, it's pretty deep of a bin because I intend to not harvest compost or castings on a highly regular basis. Plus, I produce a decent amount of compost. So I use that. I don't have any holes in the bottom, and I do not put a lid on top. I simply just lay cardboard so that there is some airflow in the bin and that there is just natural evaporation taking place. So that's what I'm doing. I also added fungus gnat prevention stuff in there. Actually, thrip, mealybugs, anything soil derived. I put my famous go-to predatory nematodes into my soil. I do very, very much so like them. So those went into the vermicast as well, just to try to control the bugs. Let me tell you, it's working wonderfully for me. But there are some bugs that will appear. I don't want you to worry about them in particular. Mite, kind of spider mite looking things. Those are not harmful spider mites. Those are beneficial spider mites, and they help with the decomposition process. So when I feed my worms, I'm feeding them in the beginning just regular compost, but now I'm starting to feed them bokashi compost in particular because it tends to degrade just a little bit faster. The worms tend to eat it just a little bit quicker. And it is a slow introduction process because it is semi-acidic. I had to do it over a period of about 4 to 5 weeks just so that the worms could adjust. And now they're loving it and they're having a great time. The other thing I like to add to my vermicompost bins is labs, so lactobacillus rice wash. I have done several videos on this. I have blog posts on how to make this. And that just goes in just to help, again, with that decomposition process. So earthworms aren't just working alone. The bin is an ecosystem. So it's not just simply the worms eating away. There's a lot of stuff going on there. There's bacteria.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
There's fungi, there's obviously worms, there's other little microfauna such as mites and other little bugs that you may see, all of which are completely normal. One thing I did not realize and found out very quickly, if you choose to get the bait worms from the store, you probably think they're going to work out well. Just an FYI, they are kept very, very cold, borderline the level in which what kills the worms, so around 5 degrees Celsius, and so that actually ends up harming the worms. So just keep that in mind. I got bait worms because I was having a hard time finding them, to be honest with you, and my bait worms came very sluggish, very slow, almost half dead. They took about a week to actually wake up and come back to life. I ended up losing some. I found several dead ones in the bin after. So just something to keep in mind. If you're choosing to use bait worms, you will experience a little bit of die-off, and they're going to be like super slow and sluggish. So just keep that in the back of your head when purchasing those guys. So when it comes to vermicompost, what sets it apart from regular compost? And that's a really great question. So the first thing is that regular curing with compost takes 2 to 3 months. With vermicast, it only takes about 2 weeks for nitrification to take place. So this is basically when ammonium is transferred into nitrate, which ATE, not ITE, which is a form that the plants can uptake. So when it comes to compost, If you've ever used compost fresh off the pile and you didn't let it cure, you'll notice that your plants probably aren't growing very well. Maybe they're not germinating very well, or the seedlings are doing very poorly. This is a sign that the compost is not aged enough and it has not yet cured, because when microbes decompose any sort of compost, they tend to mineralize and take all the carbon and nitrogen out of the soil or out of their surroundings to help with the decomposition process. So the curing allows the nitrogen that was removed to be re-added, in a sense, back into the actual system. So with a Varicast, the whole entire process only takes about 2 weeks compared to 2 to 3 months, much, much quicker. Now, another thing that is very touted is potential pathogens and how pathogen level in Varicast is considered very, very low. And this is true because pathogens or biosolids in general have different types of ratings to them. So there's type A biosolids, there's type Bs, Cs, you name it. Type A is the best, and type A is actually what is Varicast or earthworm compost. So it's considered to have a very low pathogen level, and this is low compared to most typical compost and other biosolids out there. So the reason why the pathogens are so low in an earthworm system is because earthworms consume the fungi, the aerobic bacteria, and they are not present to any oxygen while they're in the digestive tract or the gut of the actual worm. So that means that the end result is a low pathogenic disease kind of suppressing byproduct. So it is really useful in that sense. And something to keep in mind, if you're composting powdery mildew, anything that's come in contact with powdery mildew, whether that be the plant or the mulch near the plant, if you're composting that stuff, you are literally just amplifying and spreading powdery mildew all throughout your garden every single year. But if you Varicast the mulch or the plant product that had powdery mildew on it, you get better results because the powdery mildew is eaten by the worms and disposed of. So that's actually the safest way to compost anything exposed to powdery mildew in general. So that's just a little bit of a fun fact there. So when it comes to nutrient content in the Varicast, there is slight differences between that of Varicast and regular compost. In particular, the difference is in the phosphate or phosphorus, and in the case of Varicast, it's phosphentaoxide, so it's 2 phosphorus and 5 oxygens attached to it. So the nitrogen is comparable to bin compost. It's in around 1.5 to 2.5, depends on what you're adding. Bin compost can vary as well. And then the potassium is also very similar. They're basically both at about a 1.3. But again, it can vary slightly. The big one, like I said, is the phosphorus. So bin compost comes in at around 1, but Varicompost can come in at around a 3.8. So this is valuable. Phosphorus is used in the root development. It actually helps the plant with any sort of shock or stress. And so therefore, that 3.8 is valuable when we're transplanting or bumping seedlings up. It's going to help reduce transplant shock or any stress that can be administered due to these elements not being present. So that's just something to keep in mind there. The type of worm doesn't affect the nutrient content or the pathogenic properties or anything crazy like that. And their biggest difference is just the speed in which they decompose. So, red wigglers are considered the best, and that's what I currently have as well. So there is some misconceptions about the ability to eat seeds. So Varicast or worm bins in general will eat some seeds, meaning they will kill some weed species, but not all. So they'll eat some, but not all. And that's important to remember. It's not completely null and void of potential weeds. And I know compost, hot compost in particular, they claim to kill off all the weed seeds. But you will notice there is some weeds in the actual Veracast, and not all of them get digested. So that's just something to keep in mind too. But that's all I have for you guys today about Veracast or Veracomposting. If you guys enjoyed the podcast, be sure to let me know. Reach out to me. Come visit me over on Instagram, Facebook, you name it. Come say hi. Say how you found me. I've gotten a few now messages, DMs on Instagram, as well as emails over on the website. And then even I have gotten some from voicemails. I think I've gotten 3 now. So that's kind of cool. But yeah, thanks for listening. I will most definitely talk to you guys next time. Bye.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.